So, Scott, I just need your advice about something.
Okay.
So, a guy named Steve came up to me on the street and said he wanted to loan me some money at 50% interest.
Is this a real story?
Should I take that as my as a good loan?
No, that's ridiculous.
So,
50%?
that's going to be our topic this week, right? Is funding. So how do
Funding, yeah.
yeah. So that's always an interesting one. We'll get into it in a second, but I've got some stories about that.
Yeah. People trying to
But
peddle you some
oh yeah,
aggressive loans.
it happens every day. We should talk about the whole private equity market later. So I've read up a little bit on some of that and what's happening in that space. But how's your week been?
You know, better than I deserve. I'm alive, above ground and vertical, so can't complain too much.
Yeah, that's what a friend of mine used to say. He said every day is a good day when I'm on the right side of the ground.
Right. Yeah.
So my week has been hectic. We started out with a little project just to fix the shower because the shower pan was leaking, and so we had let it go. I had let it go for 2 years basically, because
Procrastinating.
it was procrastination, yes, but it was also like, it didn't feel like it was that much because it was kind of leaking out of the wall.
Yeah, not a big deal.
So I but the Chinese people have a superstition, and it's actually kind of a practical superstition, but it's if you have any water leaks in your house, any little drips or anything like that, it's basically you're losing money in your life. Is the way that they look at that. So my wife has been nagging me about that for 2 years, and she's like, "This is bad feng shui."
That is some impressive resilience and procrastination that you can handle being nagged at for 2 years before you did something. That's impressive.
I think she's finally learning though that there's a point where she can just demand that it get done. So.
If she just waits long enough, she can just drop the hammer.
Yeah, but I think she's learning that she can just drop the hammer earlier
Yeah, fair enough.
and demand it. So basically what happened is she's like, "Why don't you call that guy back that gave you a quote a year ago, and talk to him and see what his availability is?" So me in my in my eternal wisdom of never planning anything, I call him up. I say, "Hey, can you come out, take a look?" So he says, "Sure." So he comes out, gives us a revised quote. And I was like, "Okay, when can you start?" And he's like, "Next week." Well, we didn't have any plan as to actually what we actually wanted to do, right? Other than just fix the shower. But then we started thinking about it and we're like, "Okay, since you're going to tear it up anyway, right? Let's expand the shower. Let's put a new bathtub in, right?" But now we have to figure out what bathtub, where's it coming from? Now we got to go buy tile because now if we're going to do the shower, now we got to redo the floor. Right, so we might as well do that. Now we're going to do the floor in the closet to match the floor in the bathroom,
Now I see why you procrastinated.
and if we're going to do that, maybe we should redo the closets in the the shelving in the walk-in closet. So we went out and bought a new system for that,
That expanded quickly.
and now the next thing is when they're done with the bathroom, we're going to do the floors in the bedrooms and get rid of all the carpet and everything and redo the
Then
stairs.
everything else won't match. Yeah, I gotcha.
So that's how that went.
Yeah, so a tiny drip turns into a whole house remodel.
That's right. And you know what's funny about that is there's a poem, I think it was attributed to Ben Franklin, and it goes something like this. It goes, "For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the rider was lost. For want of a rider, the message was lost. For want of the message, the war was lost." And so I printed that out, right? And I put it in my booth, a lot of the times because I wanted to show people, it was an example because our nails were so much better. Like everyone else used like little panel nails, which they're not made to take stress, right? They're just meant to hold stuff up very lightly. And so what would happen is these nails would work themselves out in other people's cases and then destroy the bottom. So we had barbed nails made, right? We had these special nails made that were decorative, but they had barbs on them. So when they went in, they grabbed the wood. So I used that as my example. I put up a picture of the panel nail and a picture of our nail, and I had that poem, right?
Yeah.
and then I don't follow my own advice.
Yeah.
So, there you go, Turtle Smith. That's don't follow my example of this half of the podcast,
There you go. There
okay?
you go. Do as you say, not as you do, type of thing.
Yeah, do as he says, not as I do.
There you go.
I'm Scott Hess, tax and business consultant.
I'm John Barton, small business owner. Remember the tortoise and the hare? Slow and steady wins the race.
We started TurtleSmith to help people start small businesses, providing information and resources to small business owners and entrepreneurs.
Build a solid foundation and forge your dreams.
Well, this week we get to move on to phase two, and phase two is all about preparation. So in the first phase, we built our whole business plan, and now we're going to prepare to get our business open. And so there's a lot of kind of learning steps throughout this process and kind of getting all your ducks in a row before we move into phase three, which is execute. So the first step of phase two is funding. So you got to figure out where you're going to get your funding and plan for it. Now, you should have in your business plan your startup costs, and that's going to be what your initial funding is going to be. And again, on your business plan, don't forget that you're going to need money for yourself and all your fixed costs and all that stuff. So in this kind of step, we're just going to talk about some different examples of funding, like where you can look to get money, and a little bit about different investors and potential deal types that you can take. But there's, you know, 100 different ways to do this, to structure it. Just look at our website. We'll have more information and research to see if you're kind of getting a good deal when you go through this. The first way to fund a business is just self-funding. That's pretty self-explanatory. A lot of people start their own business with their own money. I started with mostly my own money. I took a little loan from my family. You were pretty all the way self-funded, weren't you, from start to finish?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there were times when we got a line of credit from the bank, or, you know, there were times when one or the other partners would put in some money. But starting with me, when we say self-funded, is like I literally started out of what I made out of my paycheck.
Right. And did you kind of go down the rabbit hole of credit cards at the beginning?
Yes. So for the second company that I had, which is the one I have now, JB Cases, when we decided to move to the United States, we had no money. I had no job so I didn't have I didn't have a primary job. And we were making cases, and we actually did have some loans, okay, from my mother-in-law's friend, her school friend, that owned a factory, and he was doing some work for us, and then they agreed to loan us some money. But that money was really funding what was going on for the manufacturing side of it. And over here, the operations, I just came over here and I started applying for credit cards without any thought as to whether I would get them or not. And somehow or the other, I got approved for like $20,000 in credit cards. And so I just started putting all the expenses on cards.
So in general, that is a horrible idea. And we would like to recommend everybody not to put your entire business on a credit card that's at like 20% interest. You know, be careful. Sometimes you can get, though, you know, 6 months or a year, no interest free, and that can help supplement your business. But you got to be wary, because the end result of going into debt on credit cards and not being able to make up the debt service is usually bankruptcy. I've seen it a bunch of times from clients that have come into the office. So be careful with credit cards. But self-funding is usually the easiest way to kind of get things going, but obviously that can be unfeasible depending on what kind of business you're trying to do. So the next thing we're going to talk about is some investors. So investors are very common for startups, taking on a kind of a silent partner or somebody who loans you the money at a reasonable interest rate. It's usually higher than the bank because the bank requires collateral, and investors or equity firms do not require equity. They're investing in the company. Sometimes they do, but if somebody's loaning you 100 grand just to go start your business, you can bet that the interest rate's probably going to be much higher than the bank. But a few types of investors to talk about. Usually friends and family are the first people to kind of hit up when you're starting on a new venture. If you have good relationships with your family and friends, they may want to support your dream. If you can have a good business plan to show them that it will work, they'll either loan the money or give you give them an equity share or something like that. There are such things as angel investors. People are always kind of using that term. Usually it's somebody within the industry that that kind of knows what you're doing and that you've maybe met before, or possibly a mentor or something like that, that's willing to basically bankroll you to start your own thing. And then there are venture capital firms or equity firms, things like that, that lend money out to small businesses. The different investment types that you can look at are equity shares or profit sharings or just straight up like loans. You can also do something called royalties. The difference of these is an equity share is when somebody just gets a portion of your business. So I'm starting, you know, Turtle Co. and I need $100,000 to start. John's going to give me that $100,000 for 50% equity. And so we're 50-50 partners. I'm doing all the work, you're the money, and we split profits 50-50 at the end of the day. A profit sharing is very similar, except for you wouldn't have the person loaning the money wouldn't have an actual equity share, meaning they wouldn't have much say in how the company goes. It would just be a share of the profits at the end of the day. Royalties are done on like a percentage of the sales or like a per item basis. So you could do, you know, 5% of your total revenue, or you could do like a dollar per unit sold, something like that. And it's usually either up to a certain point of payback, maybe like double what they loaned you, or in perpetuity, which that kind of sucks, but sometimes you got to do it. Any thoughts on the investors or equity shares, profit shares?
Absolutely do I have thoughts, because you know, I've been through a lot of these. So angel investing, you know, I, as you know, loaned a cue maker some money.
Yeah, for the jump cues.
The jump cue thing. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that I think could be qualified as an angel investment.
It absolutely is. You would be considered an angel investor there. You're in that industry, and so you loaned him some money to start his business.
And then royalties or commissions, you know, I made a bad deal one time where I was literally paying someone 40% of sales that he made.
Yeah.
And so basically he was making more money than we were, significantly more.
Yeah.
I have a friend of mine who retired from from one of the telecoms, and he's worth, you know, many tens of millions, I think. You know, I'm not going to disclose how much I think, but I talked to him about it, you know, and he basically said, "How stupid are you?" to me.
Yeah.
So then I went back and I tried to renegotiate the contract with the guy, and I said, "Look, this is unsustainable." And I offered him 20%, which I think was still very generous, of sales, right? And he declined to do that, which turned out to be really good for us because we started to finally see our bank account start to grow after that.
Yeah. 40% of sales is a pretty big chunk. Usually on royalty deals, there's kind of three items that you can take a percentage of. There's the total sales, which is the top line. That's usually less than 10% at most. Usually it's 3% or 5%, because basically it doesn't matter what your expenses are. They're just taken right off the top. Then there's gross profit, which is your total revenue minus your cost of goods sold. And that's usually a better number to do things on. Usually that can range anywhere from 10 to maybe 15 or 20%. And that's before your ordinary business expenses, which then gets you down to net income. And when you start to do a net income, that becomes like a profit share instead of a royalty.
Now, I'll say that, you know, I approached banks at the beginning to try to get loans, and we were just flatly turned down. PayPal came out with a program that they called Working Capital, where they would loan you money based on your history with PayPal.
Yeah, but you already have to have some pretty good sales before you can get that, right?
That is correct. So yeah. so that was our business was already going and we were already taking PayPal.
But a good way to accelerate things.
So it was a good way for us to be able to get loans in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't loans that we got to start the business. It was loans we got to promote the business, you know, to do what we needed to do, pay for trade shows, pay for inventory and so on, and payroll.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be really good, but that was also kind of expensive capital sometimes, depending on your, they have a whole range of variables that you can pick and choose, you know, to get money. But basically if you pick the slowest payback, they basically take a percentage of sales. So for every, and it ranges from 10% to 30% as a payback. And then they give you a fixed fee for the money that they loan you. So if they loan you $10,000 and they say that, you know, you got to pay them back $11,000, that's obviously 10%. Mm-hmm. But there's an expectation of how long it's going to be paid back based on your history, based on your revenue.
Right.
And then they base how much they're going to charge you for the fee on that. So if you want a lower rate, you choose a more aggressive payback, like 30% of your sales, mm-hmm. to get it paid back faster. And if you choose a slower rate, then it's going to be more.
Yeah.
And the more money that you borrow, the more they charge. So the highest that I've seen from them is like 17% on the money. The lowest I've seen, though, is for very small loans, is, you know, as much as a 0.5%.
Yeah, if you do sales through PayPal, that's a good option for like a, to use as like a line of credit, like if you need to buy like more inventory or something like that. But yeah, as a startup, unfortunately, you do have to have quite a bit of history before you can go there.
That's right.
So back to onto the investors, I want to talk just a little bit about attracting investors and how you can find people to invest in your company. Obviously, the friends and family are going to be the easiest. You can just go talk to them because you've known them for a long time. But one of the things we want to talk about is your pitch deck. And we've developed the pitch deck in the last step of phase one, along with our business plan. The pitch deck is basically your business plan, usually in a PowerPoint or some type of easily kind of presented format. It's got a lot of fluff, that word you hate, in there, but mostly it's to help kind of connect people with the company while giving them the information. You don't want to just come into an investor meeting spouting numbers left and right. Most people are going to get bored unless they're, you know, a real savvy investor who only care about the numbers. But most people want to feel connected to the business or a little bit excited to invest. So a pitch deck is a great way to get people interested in your company. Now, where to find them? Networking events is probably the best place to find people in your industry who would be willing to invest. And that's going to be the most common form of investment that you'll get. Is you'll find somebody in the industry because they know whether you know what you're talking about and they know whether your business plan will work. Social media to find those people. I'm not a big fan of LinkedIn, but I've heard people have had success there. Instagram, finding people. You can also go look at some of the accelerators or business hubs. There's a lot of places like that where small businesses kind of get together, and sometimes they have networking events or access to other people. And then, of course, the tried and true cold emails, cold calls. Cold calls are better, but just getting out there and finding people in the industry and knocking on their door and saying, look, I got this great business plan. I've got an idea. It's going to work. Let me borrow money. Another kind of form that you can get some money is crowdfunding. I don't know if you've ever tried that before. It works really well with like art projects and books and movies and stuff. I've seen those do pretty well on Kickstarters, particularly like games and toys that people are excited about.
Tech products work too.
Do they work well?
I've invested in quite a few tech products.
Yeah.
Most of them have come to fruition.
I've done a few like board games and stuff like that that I'm a fan of. But crowdfunding can really work if you've got a business that is a kind of a retail type of deal where you're selling direct to the consumer. You know, you make your videos, you get people excited. And if you have a really good business plan already, that really is going to help with, you know, achieving your funding goals. The most important one I want to talk about, though, is bank loans and SBA loans specifically. SBA loans are are very good for people who want to start their own business. So you can get working capital and all the money that you need to buy all your equipment and stuff, usually at a pretty decent interest rate, and most of the time without large chunks of collateral, depending on how much you're borrowing and what you need it for. But if you submit your plan to the SBA and they approve your loan request, usually you can get funding, no problem. They back it, they guarantee that you're going to pay it back, and they make sure that banks feel safer to loan to you. So there's a loan request called the SBA 7A, and we're going to have all that information on our website. That is a key one to look at. And then, of course, there's just your typical bank loans. If you have a good relationship with the bank and you just need money for the assets that you're purchasing, that can be done. So if you need like a building, you need equipment, usually a bank can finance that at 80%. I've seen equipment go up to 100% of financing, meaning they'll pay for the whole amount. You don't have to have a big down payment. But bank loans are about the best way to start businesses. You don't have to take an investor. You don't have to give out a large equity or profit share, but you have to have the capital for a down payment, and then you're going to be stuck with a big loan interest rate.
So you take somebody like me, though, that at one point I had capital. You know, I could have paid $20,000 on a $100,000 loan.
Yeah.
But the bank didn't look at us like we were worth anything.
Well,
how do people deal with that?
Unfortunately, you got to have the equity. Like you need a house, you know, that you have equity in, or already you have property.
So they want
you
collateral. Equity.
Yeah, they want collateral. You got to have some type of collateral to back your loan. And like I said, if you're buying equipment, you can sometimes get a loan for most of the equipment, because, you know, and then they'll just put the note on the equipment or land or stuff like that. But you still have to have that kind of 20% down payment to get a loan. You can't just go and say, I want to borrow $100,000 all for working capital from the bank.
So another thing that we have done in the past is we have taken loans from our customers. So that happened to me one time where I wanted to buy a piece of equipment. I didn't have the money. I had a customer that was about to put in a big order.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him to basically pay up front the whole order so I could buy the equipment. And he agreed to that. But he also took a few points off the price.
Yeah.
So the end of that was is that we worked for 6 months basically on this one order, and after everything was said and done, we figured up that we had about $5,000 in profit for ourselves after 6 months. So you know, we more or less broke even with our expenses, but our personal income was only $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And we also couldn't solicit any other customers or take any other more profitable orders in that amount of time.
Right.
So you got to be careful about that. But that is sometimes a source of funding.
It is. Yeah, it is. Especially if you're going to do a bunch of work for one client or two clients, you can get a loan from them to get things going. But like you said, you got to be real careful. So we'll have a bunch more information on different types of investments and ways to kind of structure things. But that's sort of the gist of things for this step. It's really important to make sure that you have your funding, at least an idea of how you're going to get it before you kind of move on with the rest of it. You don't have to have your funding now, though.
Is it worth it to hire somebody like you to go over everything and help people to figure out what they may or may not qualify for, or what they need to do to get themselves into shape to look good to a bank or to somebody else?
It is worth it to find a tax professional or accountant to kind of see where you're at. Somebody, or even like a small business consultant like I do. It's not 100% necessary, but, you know, consultants or accountants and lawyers and stuff like that, they're all great to help you get these businesses started. But really what you're doing is you're just paying for a shortcut. You can kind of do all of this on your own. You don't have to have me or anybody else help you out. But it certainly does make things quicker.
So if someone, and this may be hard to say, but what should a person typically expect to spend on that sort of analysis and help?
It really depends on who you're going after, but a consultant can run you anywhere from a couple $100 an hour. Like if you just came in and asked me to take a look at some stuff, you know, maybe a couple $100, I can give you a few pointers here and there. I don't even charge for consults usually, but hopefully my phone doesn't start ringing off the hook. We'll see. A consultant can charge anywhere from a few hundred bucks up to $1,000 a day. You know, they can be very expensive. It really depends on what industry you're in and what you're trying to get accomplished. So it's hard to say an actual price, you know, for those kind of things.
I would say that there was a point, right, where I would look at that and I would say, God, $1,000, there's nobody that's worth that, you know, to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just pure ignorance. And I would try to do it myself. You know, when it came to getting an FHA loan for our house, I stayed up all night one time and just read through the entire FHA manual, so that I could understand exactly, you know, where we needed to be for the FHA. So when we put in the application, we had our money ready and all our books were where they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that was extremely helpful.
So that's a great example of if you were just had hired a professional, you could have paid them, let's say, even $1,000 and just saved yourself all that headache, and they would have known it better than you.
Correct.
And that's what it really is. Consultants, people like me, accountants, will charge you to look at things and we'll make sure that it's right. We'll make sure that it's done a little bit better. But you don't have to have it. You can do like you did, stay up all night, and you got it anyway.
So. But the flip side of that is, you know, I could have spent a fraction of that time selling cases, and I would have easily sold enough cases to pay for the consultant. And then I would have gained more customers in that space of time, you know, and more product evangelists. So that's, you know, in Germany, they have a saying, you know, is, you know, don't save on the wrong end.
Yeah.
And that's an example of saving on the wrong end, you know, where if you look at two blocks of time and you say, okay, in this block of time, can I bring in enough revenue or enough profit to pay for the people I need? And also, you know, create future sales down the road. Or is my time better spent, you know, becoming an expert in that particular part of what I need to go for loans, right? And that's something you have to balance yourself. But, you know, don't be like I was, where you just completely dismiss the cost of an expert, thinking you can go it alone without really kind of using that balancing test.
Yeah, you know, we talked a lot about time and the feasibility step, and I think it's important to reiterate that as a small business owner, your most valuable asset is your time. You're going to be pulled in so many different ways, trying to do so many different things, that it's good to hire some people to take the burden off of things that you just don't want to pay attention to. And that's basically what my whole business is designed for, is just take burden off of the business owners for their payroll and taxes and accounting and all that stuff. To better answer your original question, though, I think it really depends on what industry you're getting into and how much you're spending. So if you're doing curb painting and your entire startup cost is a couple grand, you know, something like that, it's probably not worth hiring a consultant. If you're doing a, you know, $1 million building and project and the consultant's going to cost you $5,000, you know, which is 0.5% of your total spend, you know, or whatever, I would say, yeah, you should probably hire somebody. I think that's the best way to explain it. It just really, really depends on what you're doing and whether you need a consultant or not. Every business can benefit from it, but oftentimes it might not be worth it.
Now, how would one know what a good consultant is? Because I would assume that there are some people that are more or less knowledgeable or more or less diligent.
Yeah. The best place that I think you can start is a local tax and accounting firm or a local CPA firm that's been in your area for a while, that have good ratings, have a few people working in the deal, a smaller shop that can handle you and actually pay attention to what's going on. That's probably the best place to start. Usually those guys will know a lot of other people and be able to direct you into the right, point you in the right direction to find somebody maybe in your industry or something that could help out further. That's where I would go.
Do you
first.
Think that that like community forums, community business forums, mm-hmm. is a good place to do that, or networking at like the Chamber of Commerce or the Lions Club or places like that.
Yeah, all those are great. I'm not familiar with the Lions Club.
Or the Rotary Club. Is that the business? Club? It's the Rotary. I'm sorry.
Don't they do a lot of charity and stuff, right? And then there's
They do, but they're generally if I remember right, I think the Rotary Club is basically a business organization that does a lot of charity and a lot of networking.
Yeah, those are great places. Networking events are great to find people, and you can ask around. And sometimes people will even lend a hand for cheap, you know, just to help you out. Like we've talked about before, there's a lot of people out there who will help you with your business and not charge you, just because they want to see you succeed.
Well, another resource in that vein is called SCORE. I'm not sure exactly what the acronym stands for. We could look it up, but it's basically retired executives.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. We talked about that before, I think.
Yeah. And you can find, I believe, on the SBA website, you can find a link to the SCORE, but you can also just look them up. It's just exactly as it says, S-C-O-R-E. And these are basically literally retired businessmen, retired executives who are volunteering to give time to people who are in business, either already in business or people who want to start a business. And that's really worth taking advantage of. I did that for a little while, and I had really good advice that helped me. So,
right on. Well, again, I think we'll have a lot more information on turtlesmith.com, and we'll have a bunch more examples of the different types of investing and or getting investors and what you can expect from them and the different documents you might need.
And I think it's worth it to also mention that one of the things that we're going to be doing on Turtlesmith is having a list of vendors, you know, that we have vetted.
Probably not soon, but hopefully
not soon. I know, but that's one of our goals, is basically to have resources that we feel confident in recommending. You know, that may be something that happens, you know, for free. It may be something where we get a little kickback, but we're going to be always transparent about it.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and it will be our goal to do everything that we can to make sure that the people that we are recommending are people that we would use ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
This is always annoying to ask, but if you're liking this content, please like and subscribe. It's the best way for us to get more followers and more people engaged in this great business content. You can also follow us on all socials at TurtlesmithOK and find us at turtlesmith.com.
Please like and subscribe.